Hello and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David Latulipe. This week, conversations with the co-founder and artistic director of the Ragazzi Boys Chorus, Joyce Kyle, who will share details about the boys' upcoming concerts here and at Carnegie Hall in New York City. Bay Area actress Sharon Rietkerk talks about her role in Stephen Sondheim's Marry Me a Little at TheaterWorks in Mountain View. Hershey Felder is back in town, this time as Leonard Bernstein, in a one-man show called Maestro at Berkeley Rep. He'll join me in studio as well. Plus a talk with Rob Bayless of Cal Performances and composer Uri Kane about the Ojai North concerts this weekend in Berkeley. Do stay with us. McDonald, who made history on Sunday, receiving her sixth Tony Award as Best Lead Actress for her role in Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. We heard her singing A Little Bit in Love from the 1953 musical Wonderful Town by Leonard Bernstein, a song that figures prominently in the solo show of my first guest. There's a lot of aspects to the life of the late, great, complicated Leonard Bernstein, a good slice of which is revealed in a tour de force 90-minute one-man show currently at Berkeley Rep called Maestro, performed by Hershey Felder. Hershey was in town last year for his critically acclaimed portrayal of George Gershwin in a similar acting, singing, piano-playing one-man show, and historical figures loom large in his performance resume, including Chopin, Beethoven, and Liszt. Born in Montreal, Hershey is also a composer in his own right, and his performed works include Noah's Ark in opera and Aliyah Concerto on Israeli themes for piano and orchestra, among other works. He's married to Kim Campbell, who was the first and to date only female prime minister of Canada. Welcome to Hershey.
Yeah, hi.
All right,
it's a pleasure to have you.
Indeed. He's joined by Trevor Hay, who is associate director of Maestro. Welcome to you as well, Trevor.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
Now, a figure as Leonine as Leonard Bernstein, the biggest challenge to you must have been what to focus on in the course of a mere 90 minutes.
You know, it's such a massive, massive career, such massive influence, you know, really creating the American musical scene as we know it. So, yes, you're quite right. The question is what to focus on. There is so much, and, you know, regardless of what you focus on, there's so much wieldy, unwieldy and wily in the whole thing that finding the focus was very interesting. And finding the focus really had to do with what he ended his life thinking about himself, the last poem that he wrote, and the idea that he, and did communicate this to a lot of people around him, was that he was really quite upset that people would ultimately remember him as a composer for West Side Story. West Side Story for him was a piece of his youth. He believed he had composed a great many serious great works that were on the level of the great pantheon of composers, you know, Beethovenesque perhaps. And, you know, only time can really tell if that's the case. You know, in our lifetime, we can't figure out really what is great and what isn't. Time does that for us. And thinking that the West Side Story was the thing he would be remembered for bothered him, because he thought that he had contributed a lot more as a serious composer. And being a serious composer was, in fact, his first love. So that was a very interesting thing to me. What happens and what do you want to say about a person who has made a great contribution, such as West Side Story, when he was 39 or 38, I guess, and yet has also contributed to the fact that the American musical scene is... we are responsible to him. The rest of us have careers of any sort because of what he did. Yes, a combination of the fact that he was born at the right time, with the right style, with the right education, with the right look, with all the right things. But we owe him a great deal. And that was what was interesting to me here, as someone who wants to be thought of for something that he did, and it is not really credited for it.
Mm-hmm. You focus a lot on the father-son aspect mm-hmm. of his relationship, fairly troubled relationship with his father, who had different expectations for him growing up.
Well, I think that
comes back in the way he interacts with conductors that he thought was prominent in his
conductors
life.
And ultimately everybody. You know, he was, as I can say, as I don't share very much with Bernstein as an individual. As a musician, I could say I share the same loves that he does. But, you know, other than that, I'm not quite like him at all.
Well, you've got the chops. You've got the piano chops,
well,
that's for sure.
Thank you. It is very kind. But, you know, I don't fancy myself a Bernstein. I don't. You know, I'm a performer and I'm a creator of character, and I use whatever tools I have to do that. And I don't for one second think that I'm him. But what I do share with him is that I am a first-generation child of European immigrants. My father and mother were post-World War II. Well, they were born before, but they came to this country just before and just after. And a lot of the hopes that were pinned on Bernstein as a child were kind of the hopes that were pinned on me. And I think my parents, who were very supportive, were also sort of not supportive of the notion that, you know, music is a good hobby. That's what it should be. Music should not be, but you know, you're smart enough. You should be a doctor or a lawyer. You certainly shouldn't be a musician. You have a brain in your head. And I think that's what a lot of what Bernstein's father believed. And Bernstein's father believed that also if he pinned his life on being a musician, he would land up a poor immigrant chasing around from apartment to apartment trying to pay his bills. Mm-hmm. And that figures prominently in the play because it figured prominently in the entire history of Bernstein's life. And even watching a video the other night of him later in life where your preeminent conductor here, Michael Tilson Thomas, appears commenting with Bernstein, even the discussion about the piece that they're discussing in this point, it's a Schumann symphony, the elements of what Bernstein's father gave him, the word kavana, the intention, it's a Hebrew word, this figures even in Michael Tilson Thomas' discussion of the whole thing. And the Jewish education that Bernstein had as a kid really influenced this his entire life, and it stayed with him. And so we figure for the first 10, 12 minutes upon what exactly Bernstein's father's influence in terms of his Talmudic scholarly approach to the whole thing. And that, as Bernstein later said in life, he got to do something by being, you know, musical director of Omnibus of television shows, teaching kids all over the world, so on and so forth. He says, I became the world's first musical rabbi, you know. And he did say that, and I think it's what he believed, and very much so influenced by his own father and situation.
You also use the often quoted line of Sam Bernstein that was picked up by the press after his Carnegie Hall debut. Why don't you give it to us? Sam Bernstein
says,
being quoted.
They're in the green room of Carnegie Hall, and Bernstein says, so at this point, the entire press turns to my father and they say, you know, did you understand, you know, why didn't you support your son through all these years? You'd never supported once your son's endeavors. And my father turned to them and said, well, how was I supposed to know that he was Leonard Bernstein? And it's so perfect because it encapsulates that whole relationship and, you know.
Yeah, I mentioned the father-son thing that kind of pervades the 90 minutes, and how he found father figures musically in the form of Serge Koussevitzky and Dimitri Mitropoulos, and that's kind of gave him a different aspect. You use the title song in an interesting way that I used today, the Audrey McDonald song, and thinking of it as almost an ode to Koussevitzky.
Well, the Koussevitzky relationship was very, very special. I think... You know, Bernstein later said that he said Koussevitzky gave him really the warmth of music. He said, with Koussevitzky, you know, it was all about being warm like the sun, you know, all this descriptive kind of direction. And he said Reiner taught him the absolute art of very definitive technical tools and so on and so forth. And Bernstein brilliantly said, you need both. It's not one or the other. But Koussevitzky really gave him the art form of music, so to speak. And I think there was a great love between them. Koussevitzky recognized Bernstein's genius, and Bernstein recognized Koussevitzky's genius, and there was an immediate simpatico, just like Maestro Tilson Thomas said to me that Bernstein had great respect for his own conducting, and he never got in the way of his toolbox. He just encouraged him, because, you know, Tilson Thomas was formed really before he came to Bernstein. And that is a... There's a very touching thing about the father-son relationship, the continuum of what Bernstein really believed in terms of taking music from one to the other. And if you can track Bernstein, you can go all the way back to Beethoven and Mozart and Bach, and it's all one straight line, and there's something very touching about all that.
You mentioned Michael Tilson Thomas, who was at the Sunday performance, as was I, who was in the row behind me, and how...
Shockingly
so,
if you don't mind me saying.
A more difficult performance than I think you were expecting.
Oh, well, I was terrorized.
Maybe not.
You know, I mean, in this case, I enter from a VOM, you know, right? And of course, the maestro was the last to take his seat, and he was hiding out because he didn't want people to see that he was there, you know, because people would pester him. And of course, I saw him because I'm standing right next to him as he sits down, and I couldn't resist, and I turned to him and I said, you do know that you have just made this the most difficult performance I will ever have to give. And then cue, lights go, and I walk on the stage, and I figured, well, hopefully that absolved me from all my sins. But the generosity only had to mirror the kind of generosity that Bernstein showed people who worked so hard with their music. And generosity is a very important thing in all of this. And the maestro was very generous to me.
Coincidentally, I saw him on Tuesday. They had a release party for West Side Story, the recording that they recorded last year. Uh-huh. So it was interesting to have the Bernstein tie-in right in the same week.
Which I understand is a brilliant recording.
It really is super.
I haven't heard it, but I'm told, and he appears to be very proud of it. It's really thrilling and terrific. And, you know, for all of Bernstein himself poo-pooing the thing, you know, let's face it, he did do the symphonic recording with Carreras and Kirti Kanua later on in life. And it is a brilliant score, and it's okay to have a brilliant score when you're in your 30s. Why not?
It's interesting. I was talking with Joshua at the reception about the score itself, because I was in my Ithaca College days, I was an assistant conductor for the show, A Wonderful Town, and as well as West Side Story. Those parts were a mess. So one of the biggest things that happened in preparing for this recording is that they really worked on the parts and got them all into
order. But I think they needed to, because if I'm not mistaken, a few years back they reissued at least the piano reduction score, and I believe that probably from that score, that was part and parcel of doing all this, because a piano reduction score, it now is absolutely gorgeous. It has all the orchestrations in it. You can see everything. And, you know, like with all things, what are the things that are going to last and become the great works of art in the next century? The truth of the matter is, it doesn't really matter what Bernstein thinks of it. It matters what time thinks of it. And time seems to accept this piece as being a great work of art. And why not? And I think he's probably smiling about it.
Mm-hmm. Let's involve your associate director, Trevor Hay, in the conversation a little bit. Hello again, Trevor.
Hello.
Got your microphone up properly
yes,
this time
I'm ready
around.
To go.
So what were some of the challenges? Again, you've got this massive life where there are times where you had to say, okay, Hershey, this doesn't work, or we've just got to cut this? Or...
Well, I mean, I came into the process. I inherited the associate director role from the incomparable Joel Zwick.
Well, you can still boss him around.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
Says who? What are you doing?
No, this
here?
Is good. This is, thank you, David. I'm going to, can I get a copy of this when
you
we're
will,
done?
Absolutely.
That'd be great. And I inherited the show, and we have revised, relit. We've added some elements. We've rethought some things. As Hershey as an artist matures, the shows, I think, should also reflect that. So Joel has been amazing and so generous with me and allowed me to be in on the process, and then has kind of handed me the baton. The challenge is really, I mean, Hershey has an incredible ability to see the thread in a story. And we do a lot of research together. We'll come together then post-research and talk about what resonates. And Hershey finds these threads and these themes. And then it's really about redacting. It's about reducing the amount to the core. There's a great line, Joel, who's directed everything from A to Z, and I grew up kind of, he was my childhood, all his great shows, said, look, we're making an elephant. And then anything that's not an elephant, you take away. So that's kind of that kind of resonates. It rings in my ears. And you just think, well, if it doesn't, is it telling the story? Then why is it there? And we've experimented with some things in the script, and we tried some things out early and then changed them and then moved them and then took them back out and added new things. And so it's a constant process. But working with Hershey is such a pleasure. It looks as fun as you would think it would be. Mm-hmm. I'm in the front row seat of, you know, each performance and each rehearsal.
And he's
really
taking notes.
What are you looking at me for?
Well, I mean, if we're going to get a copy of the recording, I have to say some nice things, too.
No. So actually, the wonderful thing about all this and our team is that we really are a great team, and everybody contributes. But what's hard to see when you're doing a character like Bernstein or doing a character like Gershwin, both of whom are very brash, you know, I personally, as an artist, am much easier than either of those characters. If I have one gift, and, you know, it's unbecoming of an artist to talk about their gifts, but if I have one, it's the ability to listen. I do hear things. I don't tolerate stupid notes or, you know, but I know how to listen and I know how to hear. I know how to fix, because ultimately the goal is to give the product, the best product that you can. People are paying tickets and they expect. And it is our responsibility as artists, myself as a performer and author, and Trevor's as a presenter and so on, and Joel's and so on, to give the very best product that we can without any stone unturned. Well, actually, with every stone overturned to see what is beneath it. And we never stop. It never stagnates. And, you know, if we find something at a given performance that can be improved upon, we go for it. And this is now probably the 600th performance of Bernstein. But it never stops. It's live, and it's our responsibility.
Trevor, why don't you tell us what we would see once we come to Berkeley Rev on stage? I know that there's something happening even as people are sitting down.
Well, I mean, I think most people are familiar with the omnibus television show that Bernstein hosted and really taught the country classical music. I mean, he was a maverick in that. He launched all of that for us and for a lot of people. And we walk in on what appears to be an old TV studio set. There's a camera, there's some Klieg lights, there's some overturned chairs. It has the feeling of maybe a little bit of abandonment, but there's a large piece of sheet music that we use as a backdrop for video, and Omnibus is running. And you walk in with Bernstein, you're able to come in early, and you can sit and you can watch that old footage and watch him teach us, you know, and kind of get that feel again. It creates a real atmosphere and a mood. And I think hats off to Hershey for...
That sounds like a great name of your next show. Hats off to
Hershey. Hats off to Hershey.
Like, don't it's give like a musical ideas, please.
It's like an old 20s musical review, right?
Exactly. Well, I have to mention one thing that is missing from the show.
Yes.
For those that might be concerned.
Yeah, here I know exactly where you're
is
going.
Is it a cigarette?
Is there some way to get some smoke into the production?
Well, we've, you know.
It's such a part of it.
You know what?
We've talked about
tried,
it.
And there's several things. It's an hour and 45 minutes of pure vocal work. As you know, I don't stop for 45 minutes. This was a choice. It was a real choice because there's no water on stage, you know, there's that, it's sort of this fantasy. So from a pure technical point of view, how can one do that? If there's, and I'm not a smoker,
right.
And I never have been. You pretend with the herbs and so on and so forth. There is a way. However, in the end, if you'll note, I do make reference to it.
Sure.
With the last concert that he gives and an oxygen tank that they're giving him oxygen while he's got a cigarette in his hand. It's the biggest laugh in the play. But it's... This was a choice, and we're still toying with the idea of how we can do it without, A, getting the audience sick, and myself also managing it and not getting too dry. So this is, it's a technical question.
Because what he has to do vocally is so huge, and he's doing 8 shows a week, and he does sing-alongs on Monday nights.
It's amazing.
His schedule, if you look at the year, it's more frequent flyer miles than anyone, except for maybe Kim Campbell. But I think to add a cigarette, it would have to be a moment.
Right,
it would have to be
right.
A walkout. When we've talked about
or
it,
something that's
a walkout
really
moment for a thing, yeah, something,
or something,
and then it's put out. But you never know. Maybe the next incarnation, David, will take your advice. And co-director by David.
Well, it is a tour de force performance, and I should mention that it's outstanding piano performances that are going on. Not just the Bernstein's music. You're really hitting all kinds of genres going on.
Well, there's the notion of really dealing with what he did, and if you will look very carefully at his career, certainly on video, he doesn't talk about his own music. And in fact, it's very rare you ever get him talking directly to the audience about his music. There are captures of him talking to an orchestra or talking to a conductor or conducting or making suggestions about his music, but he is never actually addressing us about his music. He's always addressing us about the greats, which says a great deal about him. You know, and it says a great deal about possibly what he thought and whether he was shy enough or, well, shy. He was never shy about anything. But there's also the notion when he does address his own music, I think it's in the movie Reflections. He is very down on the fact that the critics and the serious composers wouldn't give him the time of day in terms of being a great composer. They sort of dismissed him. And I think that hurt him a great deal, which is why he doesn't deal with his own music in front of the public.
Mm. Interesting. The run is through July 3rd. Associate Director Trevor Hay, thanks for coming in and talking.
Thank you, David. It's a real pleasure.
Hershey Felder, just such a pleasure talking to
you. I have
Hershey.
A surprise for you. I'll be very brief in its 2 seconds. I think I can announce it because it's true. It seems like the Berklee audience and the Berklee Theater, they like this piano stuff. So beginning the 25th of July, I will change hair color. I will take you back to Paris in 1848, and on that stage, I will be Frédéric Chopin.
Oh, wonderful. So glad you're coming back to do that.
That I'm looking forward to it because that's the most beautiful piano music ever. And I hope that the Bay Area audiences will get a kick about going back to Paris with me.
Maestro, starring Hershey Felder, is at Berklee Rep. It's been extended, now running through July 3rd. Tickets and information at berkleerep.org. Thanks again, Hershey.
Thank you.
If a summer road trip is on your agenda with a healthy dose of world-class artists and musicians, then you might want to consider a trip down to the Ojai Valley, just inland from Ventura, about 65 miles north of L.A. The festival, which runs today through Sunday under the artistic direction of Thomas Morris and music direction of Jeremy Dank, will have you enjoying everything from Morton Feldman to Kurt Vile, Haydn and Janacek, reimaginings of Mahler with some interesting films and discussions to supplement your experience. But if a road trip isn't in the cards for this weekend, Ojai North might be just the ticket for you. As you heard briefly from Joshua Cosman last week here, the festival is one of his classical picks for the month of June. Presented under the auspices of Cal Performances, this Taste of Ojai takes place here in the Bay Area from June 19 to 21 at Hertz Hall in Berklee, and will feature a good deal of the southern version of events, including vocalist Storm Large and the Hudson Shad Vocal Quartet, and the quasi-opera version of Charles Rosen's go-to music textbook, The Classical Style, with music by Stephen Stone Stuckey and a text adapted by music director Jeremy Dank, conducted by Robert Spano. Here to share some of the details about those concerts is Cal Performance's associate director, Rob Bayless, who helped design the programs for Ojai North. Welcome, Rob.
It's great to be here.
He's joined by phone by pianist-composer Uri Kane, whose music is featured in this year's festival, both North and South. Uri has studied composing with George Rochberg and George Crumb, among others, and has recorded some 22 CDs as a band leader. A fixture on the jazz festival circuit, Uri has also made a number of CDs featuring his jazz trio and ensemble, performing arrangements of Mahler, Wagner, Beethoven, Bach, and Schumann. Uri, welcome to Open Air.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Rob, let's start with you and how Ojai North got started.
Well, the Ojai Music Festival itself is, of course, I think it's almost 70 years old now. It's one of the truly venerable musical institutions anywhere in the world, but very especially in California. And one of the things that we at Cal Performances love to do is, of course, to bring the very best from wherever it lives to our shores here at Berkeley. And really, the Ojai Music Festival is no exception. It's just an extraordinary musical offering each year, the trademark being that, of course, the music director who curates the festival each year rotates. So this particular year, working with Jeremy has been a remarkable thing, particularly because of the birth of this new opera with Jeremy and composer Stephen Stuckey. But also Jeremy's really unique vision and his inclusive vision, that he sees music in absolutely everything, whether it's, you know, literary, musical, or even down to the genre, that he's willing to put so many different kinds of sounds, different kinds of ideas together, makes this a really robust program of all of these musical provocateurs of the last century. And well, obviously the last couple of centuries since we're going back to the classical style, but really an extraordinary collection of things that just kind of redefines music.
Do you duplicate as much as you can what's happening down in Ojai itself, or is it just a matter of logistics that dictates what can be done up here?
It's a little bit of both. We're very, very much involved together. So Cal Performances, in presenting Ojai North, is also very involved with Ojai itself. We're very involved with the commissioning projects. We share a lot of responsibility for the selection process and how we come to these unique programs. So it's a very close relationship. So when we think about what we're bringing north, it does have something to do with logistics, but it's also really trying in a slightly smaller frame and in a very different environment. You know, we're not in the Ojai Valley. So we have to both recreate, reinvent, and reposition some of these things that themselves take place in a very specific environment that is the festival.
We'll be talking with Uri Kane shortly about his contribution to the festival, but let's go around him for a moment and give us a quick overview of some of the music that we'll be hearing.
It's incredibly eclectic. Jeremy himself, in describing his curation, says he's really messing with the canon, that's where he's coming from. And of course, the centerpiece is the classical style, Jeremy's new opera derived from the Charles Rosen classic.
With music by Stephen Stuckey. Right?
Of course, with music by Stephen Stuckey. So this is in Jeremy's foray into libretto writing, and quite a successful one, I might add.
It's being billed as a quasi-comic experience. Now, the classical style is a pretty dry textbook. I mean, how are you guys adapting it, or how did Jeremy decide to add the humorous aspect?
It's not dry. It really.
Speaking as a music undergraduate at Ithaca College.
I loved that book. You know, it's the humor in it, you know, that Jeremy brings out really comes from his deep affection for all the things that book discusses. And so his sort of wry wit really, really comes through the way he handles it. Basically, he just sort of envisioned what would it be like if some of these characters that are so essential to the book, you know, certainly Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, had the opportunity to really let each other know what they thought. And so he does play with that. And he also plays with, you know, with other characters that are themselves musical, you know, musical concepts, the tonic, the dominant. So he plays with all of these things, and it really is just a celebration of all of the aspects that are so wonderful about that book.
Robert Spano will be conducting, and that's going to be on Thursday the 19th, at least up on the northern part of the festival, at 8, and as well as on Friday, June 20th, along with performers the Brooklyn Rider String Quartet, mm-hmm. out of Brooklyn, and the Knights. Can you tell us a little bit about those guys? If they're all guys, I don't know. Are they all guys? Everyone's a guy.
Heaven's a bench.
Right. Brooklyn Rider will be coming in. Actually, this is kind of a lovely thing. They will be performing the Haydn String Quartet in G minor, Opus 74, number 3, before we see the classical style.
Okay, so how large of an ensemble is involved in the classical style?
The Knights themselves, I believe it's 32 musicians. It's a significant chamber orchestra. Mm-hmm. So this is scored for a big group. It's going to be a lot of fun in Hertz Hall to have a full cast and a full chamber orchestra.
And you'll get to hear Brooklyn Rider perform some Haydn as well. That's nice.
Yes, indeed.
Let's involve Uri in the conversation. Uri, what's your take on Charles Rosen, the classical style? Have you seen any of the rehearsals for that?
Well, I haven't seen the rehearsals, but Tom Morris sent me the score for it. And there's a lot of humor in it and it's very clever. So I look forward to seeing it. And I enjoyed that book very much when I read it. I mean, the idea of making it into an opera, that's a challenge. But I love Charles Rosen. He's very opinionated. I don't agree with everything he says, but he's very thoughtful and opinionated. It's
sure.
Great to read him.
Well, your aspect of the Ojai North Festival is happening on Saturday, June 21st. At 11 a.m. for one of your appearances. Your work, Mahler Reimagined, being paired with some Janacek. Did you have some input as to what the pairing would be for your Mahler Reimagining?
Not so much for the pairing. When I met with Jeremy, we talked about several projects that I had done, and I think he really wanted to invite the Mahler project. So we're going to be there. And it's a project that we've been playing, actually, for the last 17 or 18 years, I think, at this point. And I've recorded a lot of it, but I've also done versions of the 3rd and 6th and 7th symphonies that have not been recorded. But it's a challenge to play, and it's a lot of fun for us as improvisers.
Mm-hmm. And so how are you reimagining Mahler?
Well, I think in the pieces that we'll be playing at Ojai and also in San Francisco, we're taking parts of his songs and parts of his symphonies. For instance, the first symphony, 3rd movement, which has the famous Frère Jacques quotation, and we sort of give that a klezmer bent, or we play the Adagietto from the 5th symphony and find ways within the structure of the piece to improvise. In this concert, we're also going to be having a DJ, which was originally part of the group that I had, who sort of plays Mahler against Mahler and brings in other elements as we're playing.
Let's hear a little bit of that Mahler now, and then we'll talk a little bit more with you. Here's Uri Kane's reimagining of Mahler and the beginning of the 1st symphony. Version of Mahler's 1st symphony, the beginning movement. Nice stuff, Uri. I'm looking forward to hearing the full work. So this Mahler piece, is it incorporating more than one aspect of Mahler in terms of, you mentioned his other symphonies and some of the Adagietto from the 5th?
I mean, I think one of the aspects of Mahler's music is that it itself includes so many different types of music within it. Mahler was really fascinated by folk music, by military music, by marching music, as well as all the music that he conducted as a conductor. And so in a way, you can emphasize certain aspects of his music by making references, let's say, to other traditions that he's also dealing with. Also, I guess as improvisers, we're always looking for bits of the structure that we can use as a jumping-off point, whether it be the harmony or, you know, having certain players play against the Mahler as it's happening, different things like that. And there's also a very wide emotional range within his music, things that are very slow and heartbreaking and things that are very violent. So in a way, it gives us as improvisers a chance to move in and out of his music, and I think that's the challenge of playing it that way.
So, Rob, what else is going on around the festival proper?
Well, for those who have been to Ojai North in previous years, you'll find that this Ojai North is a little bit dressed up. There'll be a little bit more environment going on just in the visual, and there will be some food and some wine and some things to do in between concerts. And there will be a really robust selection of talks that are going on. The centerpiece of which is a talk that's moderated by our artistic and executive director, Matthias Tarnopolsky, that will be with Jeremy Denk, called Curating Tradition and Innovation, which really gets to the heart of exactly what Jeremy is all about with this particular festival this year. We'll also have an opportunity to talk to all of the creators of the classical style, and we'll conclude with a community response that I will be leading with a number of members of our community, including Bill Quillen, who's a terrific musicologist there at Cal, as well as Jimmy Lopez, who's the composer writing the opera of Bel Canto, the Ann Patchett novel for Lyric Opera of Chicago.
Well, all the details are at calperformances.org. Rob Bayless, thanks so much for coming in today to help us get us primed for Ojai North, as well as maybe entice some people to make a road trip this coming weekend to hear the full festival.
Indeed, my pleasure.
We will go out with some more music of Uri Kahn. We lost his connection, so I couldn't say a proper goodbye, but he has provided us with some music from his Mahler work. Here's a brief excerpt from the Adagietto. the unique perspective of the Adagietto from the Fifth Symphony of Gustav Mahler, composer Uri Kane and ensemble. That'll be performed as part of the Ojai North concerts presented this weekend as part of Cal Performances. All the details about their performances at calperformances.org. We also have a link at our website, kalw.org. Good afternoon. David Latulipe with you. Still to come, a conversation with Sharon Rietkerk and Joyce Kyle.
Someone to hold you too close, someone to hurt you too deep, someone to love you too hard, happily ever after. Someone to need you too much, someone to read you too well, someone to bleed you of all the things you don't want to tell. That's happily ever after, ever, ever, ever after in hell. Somebody always there, sitting in the chair where you want to sit. Always, always. Somebody always there, wanting you to share just a little bit. Always, always. Then see the pretty girls smiling everywhere, from the ads and the TV.
Craig Lucas singing Happily Ever After, a tune that was cut from the original Stephen Sondheim production of Company, but reincorporated into a Sondheim review. Sondheim fans are indeed in for a treat if they venture down to Mountain View for the Theater Works production of Marry Me a Little. Not so much a Sondheim musical as a review that was co-conceived by Craig Lucas and Norman Renee to incorporate some discarded Sondheim tunes, some that were written for Follies, Company, A Little Night Music, and many more, into a show format with a kind of through line. The show runs through the 29th of this month and has just two cast members, called Him and Her, the former sung by A.J. Shively and the latter sung by my guest, Sharon Rietkerk. Sharon received a Bay Area Theater Critics Circle Award nomination for her portrayal of Rose in the Theater Works production of The Secret Garden. In addition to other Theater Works roles, she's been seen with San Jose Rep and 42nd Street Moon, as well as a lead for ACT's recent production of 1776. Other stages she has graced include the Napa Valley Opera House and with the Bear Valley Music Festival Orchestra. Welcome to you, Sharon.
Hi, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. Now, what fun to bring out these trunk songs, so to speak, or the discards.
Absolutely. Well, with Sondheim, even the discards are kind of incredible.
Yeah.
So it's really fun, and it's wonderful to have audiences hear these tunes that aren't on any cast albums and can only be found in reviews and concerts that people put on.
Yeah, these shows are so set in our minds that you think of some of these tunes being incorporated, it gives you a whole different perspective of the mm-hmm. creative process mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, it's been fascinating to go back and read when Sondheim produced those two books, Finishing the Hat and Look, I Made a Hat, where he talks about all of the lyrics from his show. So I went back and read why these songs were cut and what moments in the show that they were written for. It's fascinating homework.
Hmm. Now, I'm reminded, too, when I was a kid watching a show called That's Entertainment about behind the scenes,
and a
number that was cut from The Wizard of Oz, that if it were put back in, it would totally date the thing.
Change everything.
Jitterbug. It's a jitterbug number mm-hmm. with the scarecrow bouncing mm-hmm. off the fences. And can you imagine The Wizard of Oz with jitterbug in it? It just would not work. But it's interesting how some of these shows would work if they were given a chance to have these numbers put back in.
And they actually put the title song, Marry Me a Little, back into Company. And they just shifted a moment, and now it's back in the show. And when Neil Patrick Harris did the concert, he sang that song, and it's so now that song is back in the show, and lots of people sing the other well-known song from this review, there won't be trumpets from Anyone Can Whistle. But most of the other songs, so many people haven't heard.
Hmm. Now, do you have a favorite tune of the Discards? I hate to call them that because it's...
I know. There's such reverence. But, I mean, the title song is pretty incredible. It's such an emotional catharsis, and it's exciting to sing every night. And but there's also this crazy number called Can That Boy Foxtrot, and it's a tongue-in-cheek, and it's 4 minutes where I play three different characters in one song, and learning that and creating three different people in a quick moment and showing the audience who's who without props or anything like that has been really fun. So that's fun to sing, but that's been a challenge.
And that's the one of many numbers that were cut from Follies.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and it was replaced with, oh my gosh, which number was it replaced with? You Can't Imagine the Show Without It. And it used to be this just kind of throwaway, hilarious vaudeville number.
Oh, I'm still here. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
That's what replaced the song. And it's just, the songs could not be more different. So
that's true. Yeah. That's true. So I just learned that the show doesn't have dialogue.
Correct.
So it's just a review of number to number. Mm-hmm. So how is the show crafted?
It's kind of beyond the songs and the general premise that it's two 20-somethings living in the apartments above and below each other, with the convention on stage that we share actually the same space. So our apartments are realized on stage in the same place, but we don't see each other because he technically lives one floor above me.
Oh, neat.
But there are no dialogue transitions, and you just move from song to song to song and make it your own, because other than that very simple premise, there's nothing stated for you. So we moved it to San Francisco from New York, and we both work for tech companies. My character works for Google. It doesn't really come into the musical other than it's something interesting and gives her a background. And yeah, you just have to find your way from song to song with nothing other than a quick piano intro or crossing from one side of the stage to the next.
Well, tell us about him.
Him is played by AJ Shively from New York, an incredible actor. And we actually did a reading of a new musical a couple of years ago together at Triangle. So we had met before, which was really nice. And he's wonderfully talented. And he gets to play a little guitar in the show, which is kind of fun and something that's unique to our production. And just like her, he's alone on a Saturday night, and the story follows the two of us throughout the night. And you see us both yearning for something that's missing in our lives, namely someone to share it with, and how that longing affects us alone on a Saturday night.
And so without dialogue, the songs reflect that one after another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting to see how songs that were written for, you know, five other different Sondheim shows with plots of their own can work together to tell a whole new story. So it's definitely challenging to make songs not written for what you're doing work in the moment, but I think we've done a pretty successful job, and audiences have been so supportive and reacting really well to it, and we're very lucky.
Well, a shout out to your musical director, William Liberatore.
Yes, he's amazing. He sits on stage with us, and he's our apartment next door neighbor, so he gets an apartment and a costume of his own, which is kind of fun, and he's just a genius and such a beautiful musician.
And congratulations on a lovely review recently in the San Francisco Chronicle. So we should
haven't
get some
read it,
crowds.
But thank you very much.
All right. Well, the show runs through the 29th at the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts. Opened already and through June 29. Information at TheaterWorks, theater with an R-E, theaterworks.org. Sharon, thanks so much for taking a little bit of time with me today to talk about the show. And the aforementioned Neil Patrick Harris, we happen to have him at the ready, recent Tony Award-winning actor. Here he is singing the title role from Marry Me a Little. Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you.
Marry me a little, love me just enough, cry but not too often, play but not too rough, keep a tender distance so we'll both be free. That's the way it ought to be. I'm ready, marry me a little, do it with a will, make a few demands I'm able to fulfill. want me more than others, not exclusively. That's the way it ought to be. I'm ready. I can be your right arm. We'll go through a fight or two. No harm, no harm. We'll look not too deep. We'll go not too far. We won't have to give up a thing. We'll stay who we are. Just enough, warm and sweet and easy, just the simple stuff. Keep a tender distance, so we'll both be free. That's the way it ought to be. I'm ready, marry me.
Neil Patrick Harris was certainly ready to sing that song, Marry Me a Little, the title song from that Sondheim review at TheaterWorks, theaterworks.org, to catch Sharon Reed Kirk as well as A.J. Shively in that production. Good afternoon. David Latulipe with you for Open Air. Final guest for this week is Joyce Kyle, the co-founder and artistic director of the Ragazzi Boys Chorus. They're off to New York City soon for concerts at Carnegie Hall and other venues. But before they do so, they're offering a send-off concert this Saturday in San Mateo. It's Ragazzi Pops, with a variety of songs ranging from Simon and Garfunkel to traditional Filipino music that the boys learned from their tour of South Korea last year. The Chorus offers a complete musical education with a program designed to take young boys from their first exposure to the art of choral singing through a full course of choral and vocal instruction. Here to talk about the Chorus is its artistic director and co-founder, Joyce Kyle. Joyce, thanks for coming back to see us.
My pleasure.
So you're also conducting this concert?
Yes.
Let's start with the send-off concert. What else are we? We're going to hear some Simon and Garfunkel.
Yes. We're also going to throw in some trios from the Magic Flute, because our boys recently did West Bay Opera production, and so they're all ready to go. So we're going to throw in a little classical music. But most of it, we have a little band. We have a drum set and a bass, and we're doing, you know, Is You Is or Is You Ain't My Baby and stuff like that. Well, you mentioned we're doing Bridge Over Troubled Water, and then we're doing a disco medley with dance, which is quite fun, including I Will Survive and YMCA, which is very funny.
Great. Well, you mentioned these collaboration with one of the opera companies. The Boys Chorus has also sung with the San Francisco Symphony and the San Francisco Opera, collaborated with San Jose Opera, as well as my own, I like to say, the Peninsula Symphony that I've played.
Oh, yes,
with.
Yes.
So what other collaborations are in store for the Chorus?
Well, next year we've been asked to do Noah's Flood, the Benjamin Britten, with Fremont Opera.
Nice.
And, you know, these things come. We just finished something at Stanford with the Craig Jessup, who is the director from Mormon Tabernacle Choir. So these things kind of come. We don't really know what's coming down the pike. That came to us like in November, and then it was immediately we had to learn it. West Bay Opera came to us pretty late, too. San Jose Opera is doing Magic Flute next year, and we're hoping they'll consider us for the spirits.
Right, good. And so the Chorus is off to New York for its tour this year. Last year, you said South Korea.
Right.
Where else has the Ragazzi Boys Chorus gone?
Oh, we've gone many places. One of my favorites was Cuba. We went to Cuba, and we met lots of singers there. We got to meet the professional choirs. They didn't make us go sing with children. They let us sing with the really great people. Gosh, we've been to England and Wales and Spain. We're going to South Africa next year.
Fantastic.
That's really exciting.
Very
yeah.
nice. Well, how can I audition?
I have to be between the ages of 7 and 9.
Okay.
We're actually holding
seven
auditions.
7 and 9, really?
Well, we do take older boys, but it's hard to place them because unless they've had some background. I mean, we've had 12-year-olds want to join us. But it's helpful if you're younger because you can get all the training.
Sure.
And all you have to do is call the office and make an appointment to audition.
There are some hormonal issues as the boys get older.
Well, we keep them. We have a high school group, but it's pretty hard to come in at that level with no background in it. So. Mm-hmm.
It must be exciting for you as a co-founder to tour like this and to see a series of boys go through this program.
It's very exciting to see my grown-up boys. We have an alum group now called Continuo. And I look at them and I picture them as 10-year-old boys, you know, hitting each other on the bus or whatever they did.
Right. Do you have numbers? How many boys have gone through the Ragazzi Boys course?
I don't know, but I know we have around 180 right now. And we've grown. That's probably our biggest now. We've been in around for 26 years, and we started with 7, and then for years we had 70 or 80. In the last few years, we've had over 150. That's a good statistic. We should have that.
That's excellent. Well, to learn more about the Ragazzi Boys Chorus, go to their website, ragazzi.org. That's RAGAZZI.org. Their send-off concert is this Saturday at 7 o'clock, Aragon High School and Performing Arts Center in San Mateo. And if you happen to be going to New York and would like to catch them in Carnegie Hall on June 22nd, that's the date to make sure you're in town for that.
Yeah.
Joyce, we're going to end with a little bit of music of the Ragazzi. Tell me what we're going to hear.
Well, this is from a recording actually from quite a long time ago, but it's the Misa Criolla with some of my high school boys who are now in their 30s. So it's about 10 years old, but it's a little jazzy and it gives you a bit of the flavor of what you'll hear Saturday night.
Great. Thanks for coming in.
Okay, thank you.
The Ragazzi Boys Chorus. Ragazzi Boys Chorus, under its music director and co-founder, Joyce Kyle. That's going to do it for this week's edition for Open Air, believe it or not. I do need to put in another plug for Dawn Harms, who was so gracious last week, spending just a couple of minutes talking about the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony's concert this coming Saturday as well at the Conservatory at 8 p.m. Visit bars-sf.org for details about this concert. Opera Goes to the Movies. The Wreckers Overture by Smythe, some songs of Copland sung by some folks associated with the San Francisco Opera, as is Dawn Harms, music of Lehar, Morricone, as well as Bernstein, the West Side Story Overture, Herman, Psycho Suite. Do catch the concert if you can, bars-sf.org. Or, if you're heading down to San Mateo, catch the boys, the Ragazzi, RAGAZZI.org for information about them. I'm David Latulippe. Thanks for listening to Open Air. A reminder that all of our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org. It's there you can send me an email as well, david@kalw.org. Send me a show suggestion, someone you'd like to hear and promote in the performing arts in the Bay Area.
On the next Music from Other Minds, works by composers John Luther Adams, Anna Meredith, and Adrian Knight. Join us Friday at 11 p.m. for Music from Other Minds here on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco.
BBC World Service. This is James Menendez with NewsHour live in Brazil. Today, we're coming to you from Salvador as one of the world's great sporting spectacles gets underway. Yes, the waiting is over, and all in football's spiritual home. But is Brazil ready? We'll be hearing from across this vast nation.
Here on Copacabana Beach in Rio, there's an array of colour under the sunshine. Lots of shirts, hats, flags are on show at FIFA's Fan Fest as the Copa kicks off on the giant screen in front of me. I'm Ben James with hundreds of fans from around the world.
And this is Matthew Kenyon outside the stadium in São Paulo, where the opening ceremony has already taken place and the World Cup is about to begin.
But first, a bulletin of world news.